You've heard that time is money. Well, consider this an investment on a way to building wealth that's always right on the money. We're sitting down with local experts that all have a mind for money.
Hello and welcome to A Mind for Money with Citizens Bank. My name is Timmy Standifer, and as always, I am your host. And today with me, I have Amy, and she's going to be talking to us in depth about elder financial abuse and things that you can do as an individual, whether you are an older person or you have someone you know and care about who's older, to try to protect from elder financial abuse and what steps you can take to identify it and things like that. So Amy, thank you for coming in and talking with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience in your field, what you do, and your experience with elder financial abuse?
Sure. My name is Amy McGinty. I work at Legal Action of Wisconsin as an attorney. I work exclusively in the Elder Rights Project, and I've been there almost 5 years.
Okay.
And I did a year of elder rights work as well before that up at Judicare in Wausau.
Awesome. Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Elder Rights Project is?
Sure. The Elder Rights Project works with individuals 60 and over who have been victimized in some way. So a victim of elder abuse, physical, financial, emotional, any kind of abuse, any kind of victim, really. We will help to try to solve their civil legal needs related to that abuse.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really great that they have those resources available through those types of entities that can exist to help support them and represent them. And so you're going to be a great resource for us today as we talk about elder financial abuse. And we're going to be specifically focusing on the financial side of elder abuse, as the name elder financial abuse implies. Let's get right into it here, talking about what happens when granny's getting scammed. Unfortunately, this does happen a lot. If it's something you are not around a lot, you may not be that familiar with some of the things we're going to talk about, but I think that's why it's important that it is talked about. It's a very important topic, and it's a very important group of people to take care of. So seniors, just like anyone else, and sometimes in different ways even more so, can be very vulnerable to being taken advantage of. And financial exploitation is one of them. And how common, I know I mentioned that it is common, how common is it though to see elder financial abuse?
Sure. It's hard because it is very underreported. Whenever you look for the statistics, they always have that iceberg model where, you see so much of it and then there's so much more below it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the more recent statistics I was looking at suggested at least 10% will report having been victimized. And it suggested that for that 1 in 10 who reports it, probably 1 in 24 cases go unreported. It's hard to say the exact statistics, but it happens a lot, unfortunately.
Okay, so there's a lot more happening that doesn't get reported.
Absolutely.
To the public, and we'll go over reasons why that happens later. But unfortunately, it's a lot more common than we might think. And what kind of different types of financial exploitation is there? That what kinds of things are common?
Sure. So one of the most common ones is identity theft. That's theft of, personal documents, identifying information, and then somebody using that, unauthorized, obviously, to do things like open accounts, charge things to them, get loans, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of that. Another one is scams. Unfortunately, that's a huge one right now. Always is mm-hmm. a huge one, and there's more scams coming out every day. We see a lot of romance scams, of course, people meeting on the internet and then asking to be sent money by the elder. Seen people lose a lot of money to that, unfortunately. We also see a lot of the counterfeit check scams. So those are usually associated with like some kind of claim that you won some money or a prize or the lottery, and they're going to send you this check, but you need to send them back X amount of money out of it to pay for some fees. And of course, that's a bad check. So then you're on the hook for the money that you withdraw from the bank. The grandparent scam a lot. People call, you say, help me, or they say, help me, grandma, don't you know who I am? I need your help. And, draw them into some kind of an emergency to send them money to get them out of jail. And then another one that I only recently learned about is with these robocalls. So, you know, everybody tries to avoid answering scam calls these days, but sometimes you accidentally do. And it'll say something like, at the end of the message, it might say something like, press 1 to be removed from this list, from the calling list. You should never press 1 because that indicates that there is somebody on the end of that line, a live person there, and you will get more calls. So you should always just hang those up.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a, unfortunately, as you even just showed an example, lots of different ways that people try to get people, specifically elderly people, involved in getting a hold of their money or information. Like a lot of those show, it a lot of times a scam is built off of building some sort of trust or rapport. Whether you're faking to have that trust by pretending to be a grandkid, or like you said, with the romance scam, trying to build a relationship with the person to then start, you know, taking advantage of them and taking their money. And it's not like you can see financial abuse physically on someone, like maybe you could signs of physical abuse. What are some of the signs that you can look for, not necessarily as the person being taken advantage of, but maybe from the standpoint of someone who is related to them or maybe works with them or spends time with them? What kind of signs can you look out for to try to catch when maybe one of these scams or different types of abuse are happening to them?
Sure. Can I go back to the trusted person of identity,
yeah.
or I'm sorry, of financial elder abuse, just because a lot of the signs are related to those. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite touch on that one. So the trusted person one is financial exploitation by a trusted person. That means obtaining somebody's property, goods, money, belongings, things like that for less than, either for free, you know, theft, or for less than fair market value. And doing that by deception, coercion, enticement, or force. Mm-hmm. So that includes things like manufacturing consent, you know, forgery, flat out deceiving somebody, you know, selling them, they're signing one document when they're signing another, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we see a lot of that with trusted individuals in the home. So caretakers, relatives, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that we, you know, I unfortunately have seen my fair share of when I did work more on the front line of the bank, being a teller or personal banker. You see someone who's a child of an older person and they're on their bank account with them, or maybe they're even power of attorney for them, and which we'll talk about that more later, but they stretch their responsibilities a bit too far. And this is, yeah, like you mentioned, this is something that one of the areas that is a big red flag as far as things you can look out for. Four signs of elder abuse. So yeah, if we want to talk a little bit about that now,
sure.
The different signs that you can look for to try to notice when elder abuse is going on, elder financial abuse specifically.
Sure, of course. So a couple of the big red flags can be physical. A lot of times having somebody's basic needs go unmet, if all of a sudden, you know, your relative can't afford their rent, or they're getting an eviction notice or a notice that, you know, they're overdue. Having utilities shut off, not having enough food, not taking care of themselves. A lot of self-neglect stems out of other forms of neglect. Always, you know, suspicious banking activity, large sums of money being moved around, a new will being written, and, you know, them talked into signing when there was nothing wrong with the old one, nothing has changed. Any new financial documents, seniors talking about a new friend. Maybe they have this new friend in their life that they just don't stop talking about. Oftentimes that is somebody who has inserted themselves into their lives to take advantage of them, unfortunately. And then provision of like unnecessary services. That happens a lot with caretaker abusers who start billing them or whatever entity it is for unnecessary things, or overbilling them, things like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so we talked a little bit, mentioned a little bit that it doesn't always go reported when these things happen. So what can you do if you do notice these things? What's the first step or the first things you should do as an individual if you notice any of these signs?
If you notice them happening with somebody you care about?
Yeah.
I would suggest, first of all, I would suggest trying to talk to them, and that isn't going to be easy because a lot of times they are emotionally invested, especially if it's something like a romance scam. It's going to be hard for them to believe. It's going to be hard for them to accept. But I would, of course, always start with them. You always want to make a police report, unfortunately. That's a really good way to have it documented and to kind of put that person on notice. If it is a person in their life, put that person on notice that, you know, they are you are onto them,
yeah,
and what they're doing, even if the senior doesn't accept it. police reports, going to the bank and trying to make sure accounts are safe and secure, or even switching accounts, helping them to switch accounts if they are accepting of it, obviously. Switching accounts just to make sure everything's locked down, putting on credit freezes, things like that,
yeah,
are all good first steps.
Yeah, so it sounds like largely a lot of it does come down to the person who is the victim of the abuse being willing to take steps and hopefully listen to what you have to say. But thankfully, there are a few things that you can do outside of that to try to at least get someone else watching or let someone else know that
sure,
you're suspicious that something's going on.
Absolutely.
And so we touched on financial power of attorney a little earlier. There are a lot of types of power of attorney. Sometimes it's all encompassing. Can you tell us a little bit more about financial power of attorney and what that does, what benefits that may provide someone as well?
Sure. A financial power of attorney is a document that gives legal authority to an agent, whoever you designate is your agent, to handle things such as property and finances. there are a couple reasons why you should have one. It's a great thing to have one, even not just for seniors, but for everybody, because it allows you to appoint somebody that you trust to help take care of those things, of those finances and property. It's also good because it can help avoid more drastic measures like guardianships. For example, if you become so incapacitated, you might need a guardianship. A judge may not put one in place if you have a fully functioning power of attorney who is able to take care of things. It also allows you to appoint this person without losing any of your rights. So a lot of people are afraid to do a power of attorney because they believe they're losing their rights to control their money, and that's not the case at all. They keep their rights. They just give power to another person, an agent, to help them with that. That might be it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
so why, why would this be a better option for someone than, say, just, you know, adding someone to their accounts,
sure,
like as a joint signer or a joint owner on that, or maybe refinancing the house to have their kid on their mortgage with them? Why would a power of attorney be an option that could be better for someone than doing something like that?
Sure. A financial power of attorney brings with it a fiduciary duty, and that is to act in the person's best interest. So if, let's say, if person A goes to the bank and puts person B on as a joint account holder, that person B, will have full access to all of person A's money, funding, anything. They can wipe out the account, basically, even if they didn't contribute anything to the account.
Yeah.
If person A puts person B on as a financial power of attorney, they can't do that.
Yeah.
They can only touch the money, only handle the money for that person's benefit in line with what they want, their wishes, things like that.
Yeah.
They have this fiduciary duty to act in their best interest, to avoid conflict and things like that. It's not saying that some people don't abuse powers of attorney, because absolutely some people do, but there are legal remedies for abuse by power of attorney.
Yeah. So adding someone to an account, you are in effect making them a joint owner of any funds there. If you add someone to the deed of your home, they are a co-owner of your house.
Absolutely.
Whereas, like you said, power of attorney maintains ownership fully for you. You're just allowing someone else to take action with those items. But like you said, they have a legal responsibility that everything they do is supposed to be for your direct benefit. So again, yeah, there's that legal backing where if things were going wrong and someone was taking advantage of that power of attorney, there actually is legal recourse that can be taken.
Absolutely.
So it is a pretty big difference. And you did mention briefly, a joint account may be the best option for someone. It's not as common, but it could be. It's not saying that that's never an option for anyone.
Of course.
But there are a few other things that it does affect. I know that doing a power of attorney versus adding someone on as joint may affect how things are handled when someone passes away. Like if it you want to be careful if you're considering adding someone onto an account versus a power of attorney. How does that affect your will? How does that affect your estate plan?
Right.
Everything like involved there. Can you talk a little bit about that, the difference of how that might affect?
So those, those are all good considerations. I don't practice really estate planning type things, so I can't speak specifically to how that affects it. I do know that one concern that people tell us, well, I want a joint account so that the account can go to them after I pass. Mm-hmm. That's easily done with a transfer on death.
Yeah, payable on death.
Payable on death. Yeah, mm-hmm. By making it payable on death.
Them a beneficiary of the account rather than a joint owner.
Right.
And you can have your power of attorney be the beneficiary
Absolutely.
Of your account. So, you know,
Absolutely.
You could in effect give someone the power to come in and act on your behalf and withdraw money and make payments for you. But then when you pass away, power of attorney ceases to Correct. Have any effect. So if you were my power of attorney, let's say, and I unfortunately passed away and then you came into the bank a week later and wanted to withdraw money from that account, once that notice of passing has been received by the bank, that money can't be touched until proper what's called decedency has been processed, and then we can pay out to whoever the beneficiary is on that account. Even if it's you, we have to wait and process that all properly and then pay you out and make sure it's all cleanly handled and everything is following what was set up on that account or what the will may state. Whereas if someone's just a joint owner, they can just – if one person passes, you just still have that account. You come in and you can just do whatever with that money. And that can affect, you know, I've seen it happen where then, well, there's supposed to be a will dictating who gets some of this money and it's all messed up because whoever was on the account with mom or dad started taking from it before everything was settled. And it just, you know, can make for more of a mess than it needs to be, unfortunately. So why do you find, kind of pivoting a little bit here, why do you find that some or if not a lot of people don't want to report when they're being abused, even if they may be aware of it? I know there's a lot of times where people are aware that the person is taking advantage of them, but they don't want to report it. And why do you find that is?
There's a couple reasons. One is people are embarrassed or afraid to admit that they've been taken advantage of. They think, you know, it doesn't happen to anybody else in the world and they were the only ones who fell victim to it. And they're ashamed sometimes. And that's just not true. You know, lots of people fall victim to it, unfortunately. They may also feel threatened by the person who's exploiting them, especially if it's a relative or a live-in caregiver or somebody in their house. Mm-hmm. We also see a lot of people who don't want, you know, they're willing to work with us, but they don't want to work with the police at all because they don't want it going on their kid's record that they did this. So those are a couple of the reasons usually.
Yeah. And like you said before, it all ties into largely how a lot of these scams are very emotionally driven.
Absolutely.
And there's usually a lot of trust and connection that's being exploited. And, you know, that's another thing they're exploiting about that trust and connection is they think there's a less chance of them getting turned in if they're being trusted or they're trusted by the person they're taking advantage of, unfortunately. And so what are some resources that we can use to help someone if we think they are being exploited? Like say we notice that and we've talked to them and maybe they don't really believe us just from us talking to them. What kind of resources can we point them to or get them involved with if they, you know, it seems they very clearly are being taken advantage of and they should acknowledge that. What would you recommend for that?
Sure. A great place to start would be the local county ADRC, the Aging or Disability Resource Center, or their APS, Adult Protective Services. They're usually connected in some way. But they can start an investigation without you know, jumping to police necessarily if people don't want to go to the police right away. Police are a great resource.
And those are all ran by each individual county, correct?
Correct.
And whatever county that person resides in, not necessarily where you are, but where whatever that the person you suspects being abused, their county.
Absolutely. Okay. Their county should have an ADRC and an APS. And they have social workers who and investigators who can look into these things. And then Legal Action of Wisconsin. We have our whole Elder Rights Project stretching across all of southern Wisconsin. And, you know, we're here to help victims of elder abuse with any kind of civil legal need. We are a good option for those who don't want to go to the police and have a record and things like that. And we're never going to take any action without the approval of the elder who's being abused, but we can advise them on their options and think of some creative ways maybe to help get things back on track.
Yeah. And a lot of what you've mentioned and even mentioning there, it sounds like it very largely comes down to trying to help educate the person being taken advantage of as much as possible, hopefully educated before they're taken advantage of, so they can try to, you know, catch those things before they get in too deep.
Yeah.
Cause like you said, a lot of people unfortunately get to the point where they're too embarrassed and they don't even want to acknowledge it. They'll just say, oh, it happened to me, we're just going to move on, when there's things they could do to help, you know, maybe fix the situation, help recover some of the money in some cases. I know each case is very different.
Absolutely.
But, you know, there are some things that can help maybe recoup some of what you lost. And I think, like you said, too, it's very important to let people know that this is really common. It's unfortunately really common. And, you know, to not be embarrassed if you find that you are in a situation where someone is taking advantage of you. And obviously a situation where you feel threatened or in danger is different, but there are still things that you can do to help with that situation as well. So I'm going to get into some do's and don'ts here about elder financial abuse and what you can do to help prevent it or spot it. I would say, first of all, if you are someone who is getting older, do consider a financial power of attorney. You don't want to wait till you're at the point where you need it. You can put a power of attorney in place and not really use it until you need to. You can also, I know there are also certain types of power of attorney. I know usually it's more on the medical side, but there can be contingencies in power of attorneys, correct?
Absolutely.
Where you set it up to not take effect until something specific happens.
Yeah, that's like, called the springing power of attorney. It springs and only becomes effective after a certain thing happens, such as being declared incapacitated.
Yeah, I know that some people have them set up where if they get into an accident and they aren't coherent or in a coma or something like that, you know, it gives the power. So those types of preventative and you know, precautionary measures are good to start thinking about early. You know, even if you're my age, it's something that, you know, I should maybe even think about to have those things set up, because you never know what could happen, and you don't even necessarily need to be older to have that be something beneficial to you. And I would say, don't be afraid to report abuse of any kind to whether it's a loved one, a neighbor. And it doesn't just have to be financial abuse, obviously. I mean, obviously you're not a tattletale or anything like that if you're reporting someone being abused. Don't ever feel scared or ashamed to report any of that to the proper authorities, or even talk to the person and say, hey, you know, how are you doing? How was your relationship with this person? Is everything okay? You know, take steps to make sure that you're not just sitting idly by while someone is unfortunately being taken advantage of or abused. I would say, do try to keep up on the scams that are making their way around, whether it's through email, online, or a person-to-person type scam, or over the phone. The more you know about them, whether you are someone who's they're trying to take advantage of, or you know someone who might be taken advantage of, if you are up to date on those, then you can help try to stop those before someone gets involved with them. And I would say, don't be surprised if a bank employee ever asks you questions about your transactions or what's going on with your money. You know, if someone comes into the bank, and we've unfortunately had this too, with a wire transfer request for $5,000 to the United Kingdom for a business investment, we're going to ask you questions, because obviously that's a strange transaction, and we're trained to do that because we're trying to help spot situations where someone's being taken advantage of. If you tell me that you got an email from someone you don't know who's in the United Kingdom and they're starting this business, and you can get in at the ground floor for $5,000, you just need to wire it to them. Yeah, I'm going to tell you that's a bad idea, and you're probably being scammed, unfortunately, and that may not be what you want to hear. And a lot of times, unfortunately, it's not what they want to hear, but it's not that anyone at the bank is trying to embarrass you or make you feel like you're doing something bad. It's we're trying to help you so that you don't get into a situation where you've lost money or you've lost property or possessions, or someone has your identity and they're, you know, can like you mentioned before, get loans in your names, things like that. And yeah, just some closing thoughts. Like I said, we are trained as financial professionals to watch for these things. So if you have questions on a situation that's brought up to you and if you should get involved with it or if it might be a scam, definitely ask. Always ask your personal banker, your lender, someone out of the financial institution that you trust, that you know, because we have been, we get notified whenever a new scam comes out. We get notified on it. We get trained what to look for and the types of things to maybe ask about to see if this is a scam or not. And don't be afraid to mention to your financial institution or a legal action committee like the Legal Action in Wisconsin or the ADRC, things like that. If you have been taken advantage of and you don't know what to do, I mean, it's a hard thing to do. I'm certain it's a hard thing to acknowledge and to do. But if you're able to get yourself to acknowledge that that's the case, then letting someone know, even if you're not the one who knows what's all going on, starting to talk to someone you trust that can help you look for these signs or what has happened can help try to get things to a better place for you. Maybe they can help recoup some of the things that have happened to you. Maybe not, unfortunately, but they can hopefully more definitely help you avoid it in the future.
For sure.
Yeah. And do you have any closing thoughts, Amy, on anything we talked about or maybe anything we didn't mention that maybe we should have?
Not really. I think we did a good overview. Just like you said, we can at least provide options. Mm-hmm. It's not always going to recover the money, but we can help stop the bleeding and help it prevent it from happening in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, to reiterate, the more you can know about beforehand, the more things you can try to learn about and be ready for, the more equipped you will be to prevent this from happening to you or someone you care about. And with that, we would love to hear your feedback. Any questions you have on this, we're more than happy to go into more detail, answer more questions, maybe get some more opinions from Amy if you have questions. Or if you have suggestions for other episodes or any feedback or anything, you can email me directly at heytimmy@amindformoney.com. That's HEYTIMMY @amindformoney.com. And with that, Amy, we thank you for coming on here today and
thank you.
Sharing your expertise and your experience. And we hope everyone has a great rest of their day.